And welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 233. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my headset-wearing co-host, Mike.
Yes, I'm here for a week and then gone for a week. Gone with the wind. Gone like the wind, I don't know. You know, I'm glad Travis was here while I was gone last week, because he reads enough comics for both of us. But I do have quite a few comics to talk about later in the show today that I can't talk about, like, go into depth with all of them, because I've read so many the last couple weeks that just gonna, like, you know, do some shout outs here and there. But
yeah, that makes two of us.
yeah, I know you were behind for a little bit too, so. And also, like, yeah, switching over to digital is great, because I know you're doing that, but it makes comics way too accessible, so now I'm just, like, reading anything I want to read. I'm like, something will be popping up on Comixology, like, that looks cool, let me buy it with one click, okay.
So it makes it so much easier while at work. Like, oh, I got, like, half an hour to just kill.
Yeah,
well, here's right. My tablet right here.
Yeah, pull up the tablet, yeah, exactly. And when I'm traveling, too, so I had two separate trips last week, and I get so caught up on comics, like, while I'm traveling, because it's so convenient to just have a tablet with you instead of packing all your trades. I actually, like, one of the books this week was the 80-page, or not, I read this week was the 80-page Aquaman stories.
I still have to get to.
It was so really good. Every story was fucking phenomenal for the Aquaman 80th anniversary. That was amazing. I'll talk about it later. I actually tweeted at, oh my God, I can't think of his name right now. He drew Shazam, and he did the, he's like the Darwin Cook style.
Oh, Doc Shaner?
Doc Shaner. I tweeted at him. I'm like, because Doc Shaner draws one of the 8 pages in there. And his story is by far, like, the best drawn one. And, like, he does an amazing, like, he does Aquaman, like, he just, like, threw some conditioner in his beard and hair, like, it looks fucking phenomenal in Aquaman. And I tweeted at him, like, dude, why are you not doing Aquaman all the time? And he's like, honestly, those 8 pages were a lot of fun, and I wouldn't be opposed to it. Which is funny, because people have been bugging him about doing a JSA thing on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no, I would only do a couple characters from JSA, like, because he did a Ted Grant sketch, Wildcat. Yeah. And he was like, I only like Ted Grant, which is bizarre to me, because I think Ted Grant's probably the worst out of the JSA, but that's an argument for another time. Where was it? Oh, yeah, reading a lot of comics, though. And I guess that's what you want to do with a comic book podcast.
I mean, yeah, as I joked with the Travis last week, it was like, yeah, it's getting harder and harder to read more comics, but mm-hmm. I find a way.
Yeah. You find a little. That's the thing about comics too, is only you need to dedicate like 15 minutes for one, 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, I literally will talk about a book later that I read for review, and I literally just, like, popped a squat on the shitter and got it done.
Yeah. Oh yeah. you got the tablet in your hand, you're on the couch, you're on the toilet. You know, you go out to the porch, you travel with it, anything you want. It's pretty great. Yeah. But man, what a time to be alive. We got a few trailers this week to talk about. And then on the show, sorry, we do have a guest. We always get carried away when I come back and we get to chat it up. Kevin Delgado will be on today. So
yeah.
A name that Chris and I have been very familiar with, but not necessarily on the show. So,
yeah, he was on the show once when I interviewed him at Buffalo Comic Con years ago.
That was back when he met Stephanie Phillips before she was cool, right?
I think that's the same con, actually.
Sorry, Stephanie, you were cool, but I mean, like, cool kid, you know, part of the DC group now.
Before she became Dr. Stephanie.
Yeah, true, now she's a doctor, so sorry about that, Dr. Stephanie.
That's my favorite thing to do on Twitter now, by the way, whenever someone, I noticed, like, someone talking to her, I was like, well, excuse me, it's actually Dr. Stephanie Phillips.
Yeah, please. She should really change that on her, on the Harley Quinn book. I think that would be
phenomenal.
Great. She had a speaking of Stephanie Phillips, she had a really good 8-page story in the Aquaman the Aquaman little 80th anniversary.
Yeah. Well, okay. Mike really wants to talk about that book, so let's
I do. Holy news, shit. Man. Yeah. Yeah. No, I was like, honestly, I wasn't going to pick it up, and I was in a comic book shop, and you know what the first thing that got me to pick it up was? They built it more like a trade.
Yeah.
It wasn't like one of those magazine style or like thicker issues. Like, it had a spine to it, and I was like, oh shit, like, as someone who doesn't regularly collect Aquaman, I could throw this on my shelf with my trades and it'll look good. And then I flipped through it, and the art was fucking amazing. And then I looked at who was doing stories. I mean, you got like Jeff Johns, Stephanie Phillips, I think Dan Jurgens does a story. But I was like, damn, all right, okay, well, then I'll pick this up. And I was very happy with it. Because we've talked about those 80th anniversary, whatever anniversary issues, and they're not always that great.
Yeah, this is the first one I picked up, actually. Because it's the first one where it's a character I really, really love. Yep. Like, I like Green Lantern. I like Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Who else have they done? I like Wonder Woman. But, like, I don't love any of those characters. Like, I do Aquaman, so...
Like, the Batman one was okay. I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the Batman one was good. I did grab that one.
But there's something about Aquaman where... I think it's just not enough stories are told about him, so it makes you want... It makes you want to see that anniversary edition with all that extra stuff.
I think I said it with Aquaman before. He's been so memed online, mm-hmm. and like everybody thinks he's such a joke. Mm-hmm. But he's quietly had some of the best runs in comics. Like, you go back and read the Peter David run, it's phenomenal. You read the Jeff Johns run, it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go back. But I think, especially in the early days, he was kind of a joke. And like the Aquaman riding two dolphins like skis, like yeah. that was a real thing for a while. And then I think I'd give the credit to Peter David to really turn it around. And then people wanted to write good Aquaman stuff, and the joke never left. But at the same time, great writer, great creators joined the book and did great stories. So
yeah, I mean it's. Either way, it was a really good time. Check it out. I guess we'll jump into the TV news. Hawkeye trailer, or the best Christmas movie you shall see.
Yeah.
I think this is something really clever by Disney. Before we even talk about the trailer, when you have a character like Hawkeye that you're only going to do like one season of a show for, or a couple seasons. Build that character that doesn't really have a lot going on for him around a holiday like Christmas. Why not? Right? I think it's genius.
Yeah, I got some heavy Die Hard vibes from that trailer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, because that's like my favorite Christmas movie. It is a Christmas movie. I'll fight you. And and that's what I got from it.
Yeah, that got me excited right there. I like the interaction, like when he meets the Kate Bishop. I like pretty much everything that happened in that trailer. So I am the most excited for the show I've ever been after that trailer.
Yeah. I don't know a whole lot about Kate Bishop, but it looks like, you know, just it's a Home Alone, like gone for the weekend, I'll be back for Christmas kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, when you turn into an evil villain, murderous assassin, dude, there's going to be some repercussions. You're going to piss off some people. So makes sense to me.
And I'll say, just from this trailer, I can tell they took a lot from the Matt Fraction, David Aja run.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody go read that, and then you can be that guy who's like, I read the comic before the show came out.
just really quick, before we get to the next trailer, I did watch Shang-Chi, and I know you already watched nice. It. So I saw it at a theater. I had to go to a theater just to confirm that I'll probably won't go to a movie theater again for like a few months, just because the crying babies that were brought into the theater, the child kicking the back of my seat, and like several kids running around because they were bored in the movie. But like I was already over halfway through the movie, so I wasn't at the point where I was about to like get up and leave. But like it was just like to the annoyance to where it was like, you guys, you can't just like. Control your kids to watch a movie for a couple hours. But other than that, the movie was fantastic. My second favorite Marvel movie is what I'll say.
What's your first?
Winter Soldier, man. Nothing beats Winter Soldier.
Okay.
That one is just the boat scene in the beginning. Like, you're never gonna beat that.
Yeah.
Where like Captain America stabs a guy with a knife. Like, people forget. I don't forget. Like, he stabs the dude in the hand, I think, but still, like, fuck yeah.
Great movie. My first is still Endgame. Like,
so
dude, that's everything I want in life in a movie.
Yeah, that's true. Right. But I will say this. This may or might not spoil something for people for the movie. I won't mention any names, but the fact that you got this movie to relate to my least favorite Marvel movie, and that would be Iron Man 2. And that's where I'll leave that at. And make me like the character that I wasn't a fan of in Iron Man 2. That in itself, like, okay, you guys got me there. And I will say this, I could have done, and this is not, I'm not really spoiling anything here, I could have done without the huge, giant, like, Godzilla battle at the end of the movie. I don't know about you, but, like, I could have done away with all that. Like, just the hand-to-hand combat alone was getting me through that movie.
It gave me a big smile when they did the Neverending Story, like,
yeah,
sequence,
yeah,
that, at the end. I did love, yeah, that. Was it Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3?
Oh, I'm sorry, Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, Iron Man 2 was with the whip guy.
Yeah, with Whiplash.
With the cage bird. Fucking Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke with a terrible Russian accent. That's the dude who played the wrestler, by the way, to go on to be a Russian villain for Marvel. Anyways, the movie's fantastic. I really loved they did all of the fight scenes the way I wanted. I mean, we had some like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. We had some like old kung fu style, like Thousand Punches type of shit, like Ip Man style fights. And then you got your kaiju battle at the end. So something for across all Asian cinema, pretty much. And then you had the quintessence thing at the end, which is pretty big deal. So we got to see some Avengers characters that, oh yeah. And I think you talked about this already. Bruce Banner in a cast. So Bruce Banner, number one is Bruce Banner. He's not the Hulk anymore,
which is a big thing.
It's a big reveal. And because you don't think that at first, you're just like, oh, it's Bruce Banner. And you're like, oh shit. Like, he's been the Hulk for the past how many movies now?
Well, I literally, when I watched it, thought that I'm like, oh, it's Bruce Banner. Cool. Nice. Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
And like, then I thought about it on the way home. Like, wait, he became Professor Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, he can't go back to Bruce Banner. So there's a story there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it's probably a Hulk movie or something.
It'll be the background of another movie, because I don't think they can do solo Hulk movies.
No, that's what you do when you want a franchise to die.
I think legally they can't do solo Hulk movies.
Oh, okay.
I think there's something with Paramount or something where they can use them as a character but not as a solo.
But yeah, I mean, I really liked it. Go see it. I know some shit has come out about the guy who plays the main character, but whatever. I'm not too worried about that. If Disney's still employing him, then
whatever. I feel like if you're in the public light, something comes out about you. And the fact that I don't know what you're talking about says a lot. So
yeah. It was like some old Reddit comments they found on like one of those incel subreddits. So you can imagine what he was talking about. Honestly, though, it wasn't that bad. I'm not gonna get into it. I don't think it was career ruining. As I think, whatever the subject matter was about, that's fine. That's, you know, you can make your own judgments on that. But I will say that, I mean, they brought James Gunn back, and he was saying some crazy shit on Twitter. So
yeah.
I think he'll be fine. Also, a lot of great characters were played by the starring people in Crazy Rich Asians. I don't know if you've seen that movie. It's actually really good. It's a lot of fun.
We actually, I think you and I discussed this when they announced casting.
Because
I was like, why is every Asian actor that I've seen a movie from this fucking Crazy Rich Asian movie?
From Crazy Rich Asians. Because it's a really good movie, and they all did fantastic in the movie.
Well, and I can't remember if you told me or someone else, but that movie was like made to cast a bunch of Asian actors and actresses just to get them out there.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Like now we have like a pool of people.
Yeah. And that's why whenever you see an Asian cast in Hollywood now, it's like from Crazy Rich Asians. Like, oh, okay.
And the I will say a lot of people find Awkwafina annoying.
I love
just
her.
Because she's a comedian as opposed to an act. She was really good at this. And it wasn't too much. Obviously, like I would say, and I didn't even mind her in Crazy Rich Asians. I've never seen her stand up, so maybe that's what they're referring to if they find her annoying. But maybe. I thought she was great. She has a great character arc, story arc in Shang-Chi. The bus scene in the beginning of Shang-Chi. I mean, there's just so much great shit. I was loving the. I turned to the girlfriend a few times. I was like, "This is the best movie ever," and she's like, "You're embarrassing me." And I'm like, "Okay," you know, and like you see Fing Fang Foom. I'm just like. And she's like, stop, put your hand down. I'm like, all right. Overall, it's a lot of fun. If you can wait till November to see it, wait till November. But, I was very happily pleased with that. So, something a little more on the other opposite end of the spectrum, something I didn't really care for coming from Marvel is this Hitmonkey trailer. I had no idea what Hitmonkey was. I watched the trailer. I was kind of like, eh. Is this something you're excited about?
No, I thought this was canceled.
Oh.
I saw it, I'm like, oh, okay, it wasn't. Remember when Hulu was going to do, it was going to do MODOK, which ended up happening, Hitmonkey, I forget what the fourth one was, but then also Kevin Smith was going to do a Howard the Duck show.
Yep.
And they said they canceled a bunch of them. And I thought Hitmonkey was on that. I thought MODOK was the only thing coming out of that whole deal.
Oh, okay.
So when I saw this, I was like, oh, wait, Hitmonkey's still around? I don't care.
It doesn't look finished. It looks like they half-assed the animation is like one of the parts that, like, if you have a character, I don't know.
It looks exactly like that. Like, they were like, well, we don't really want to release this, but it's like halfway done, so let's just finish it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't see it breaking out in any way. I think it's going to be one and done. People aren't going to talk about it.
I watched they released the intro to, oh my God, what is the name?
Cowboy Bebop?
Cowboy Bebop. And I saw you tweeted, you weren't impressed.
That's not what I said.
Oh, okay.
I have never seen Cowboy Bebop the anime.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Just to get the nerds riled up.
No, I thought your tweet was like, you had a Skeletor running out and said, like,
I'm out or something. Yeah, it said, I've never seen Cowboy Bebop, and I'm out.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, like, you watched that and you're like, I'm out. Okay.
I'll watch it. I'll definitely watch it.
I will say, as someone who watched the anime, that intro was perfect. And people were worried about, like, the quirkiness of one of the characters that, like, shows up at the end of the first season. I think they're doing it all. I don't think they're pulling any punches. The corgi is adorable. The intro, it's almost like a Kill Bill style Quentin Tarantino cinema, like kung fu cinema, but sci-fi. And that's kind of what it is. And a lot of the characters they show in the intro are straight from the episodes, because each episode is like its own story arc in the show, and that's why it's so good. And I think they're doing a lot of those. Like, they show, like, the teddy bear, which is one of the villains, and I am actually excited for it. But we do know how Netflix has handled this anime shit in the past, so they could have just done an awesome intro, and that's the only good part about it, so...
I will say my buddy Danny over at Next Issue Pod did a side-by-side of the original anime and this one. And it's not one for one, but it's pretty damn close.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah. It is, for sure. And they left the little square, open square, because there is another character that they add to the mix. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it's good shit. So, first look at Sandman. Was it just me, or was this hard to find for you? Like, was it really announced?
I saw it announced, and it actually popped right up on my YouTube, like, because YouTube knows that I'm a fucking nerd. So it's like, hey, you like nerd stuff? Here, watch this.
Right.
It was right there on my front page, so.
So for me, I read an article somewhere. It was like Sandman teaser dropped, or I think it was on Twitter. I'm like, where? And I go on to Netflix. It's not on the front page of Netflix. And I had to type in Sandman on Netflix to get the page to pull up with this trailer. And it like wasn't advertised anywhere. And this isn't a trailer. This is the whole opening scene to Sandman. Like the summoning of, you know, one of the, I don't know what they call them, like death and dream and all that shit. But it looks awesome. The guy who plays Sandman looks like Sandman. Mm-hmm. And that whole opening scene where they're summoning him with the cult and everything, that's straight from the comics, and it looks pretty comparable to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've read very little Sandman, but I did read the first volume, and I remember that sequence, and that was like one of my favorite sequences from the whole trade. But even like the suit he pops up in with the gas with mask and everything was mask. Like spot on.
And they zoom in on the mask, they zoom in on the jewel, his ruby, and they zoom in on the sand, his pouch of sand. And that's like the premise is like this dude captures Sandman in a jar forever, and he finally gets out, but his tools are missing, and so he has to find his tools, which are those three things. So, I mean, it looks good. I'm excited for it. I honestly, the only downside is I wish Joseph Gordon-Levitt was playing Sandman, because I think he's awesome. But I could live with it.
Yeah. I'm just not a huge Sandman fan, so I have very little to say about it other than it looked good.
And as far as TV, have you watched any Why the Last Man?
No, so I haven't watched any Why. I am two episodes behind on What If, and I did not watch Visions this week. So I've been just a complete fuck up all week.
So I wouldn't call you that. But I'm caught up on Why the Last Man.
How was
it? And it's really good. And I will say the fourth episode is where shit starts to take off. In the sense of like, now we're moving in the plot. They do a lot of things differently. Not in a bad way. I mean, the middle of the comic is when he meets his mother. Like we start off, like we see his mom, like, I don't know, episode three. So the timeline's a little shifted, but they kind of got to do that to get their characters established and stuff like that. And then a little bit more of it, they kind of brought it into 2021 with the whole, there's a lot more like political updatedness between the Jets and the Sharks in the Capitol, you know what I mean? Like the blue and the red. It's a little more up to, yeah.
I was going to say, I'd also heard, and no, this isn't a negative in any way in my eyes, but that they really hammer home that it's the Y chromosome that kills you.
Yeah,
that you're a man.
Right, yes. So the trans people are represented.
Yes.
And honestly, that is something that they've added that makes it very interesting because obviously Yorick, the whole premise of the show, if people don't know, is he's the last man with a Y chromosome. So you know, and there's times where he gets spotted by women and he'll be like, oh, I'm just looking for testosterone, because there are characters that are trans that that, you know, look to the capacity of Yorick, and so that's kind of how he can blend in a little bit with facial hair and stuff like that. So it's definitely an interesting it's taking the idea of Why the Last Man and like dropping it in our timeline. You know, it's more woke, if I could use that term correctly, with all the, you know, the kids out there. But it was a different era when it got released. I don't know, when was it? The 90s or
Brian K. Vaughan even said that when he made that book, the trans movement was not as massive as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And really, if you go back in time, 99% of us didn't like think about this.
Yeah,
this wasn't something on the cultural
right
zeitgeist. So yep. when it was brought up, he even said, like, yeah, it's a good addition. Let's do something with it. We can do something cool and different with it. So he was down with it. Yeah.
Yeah, they for sure did. It's good. And if you like the comic, you like, I mean, the castings are like for Yorick and the agent, 355, I think that's her name. Awesome castings. Everybody is casted perfectly. The mother who is the president. Oh shit, I cannot think of her name. But she's an amazing actress. So good. But I'm really liking it. I think it's a lot of fun. I think and some people are kinda like that haven't read the comics see it and they're like, well, I like this. Yes, you'll like it. I think it's Hulu's been killing it lately. And with that, I think we'll jump to our interview with Mr. Kevin Delgado.
All right, everybody. We are back with our very, very special guest. Everybody, welcome to the show, Kevin Delgado.
How you doing, Kevin, out there?
Yeah, well, thanks for being here. I think Chris got to interview a long, long time ago at a Comic-Con in Buffalo. It's where you guys first met, right?
Yeah.
Things are a little different now. People haven't been going to so many cons, but we finally got you on the show. So with all our first time, I guess it'll be a first time guest we'll still refer to you as. Let's hear your origin story of what got you into comics. You know, why obviously you do graphic design, right? So that's kind of a little bit there. But what made you want to, you know, get into making your own comic?
Well, I've always been like a fan of comics since the early 90s. I had an older sister, and she would always bring home comics and stuff. And I was like, ooh, what are those? You know what I mean? And then between that and this is when comics were huge. We're talking like the Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Tom McFarlane era where they were, you know, still at Marvel. So there was that, you know, the Batman, the animated series cartoon, the X-Men cartoon, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, the video games, you know, the old arcade game, the old X-Men arcade game, which is a classic, the old Simpsons arcade game, you know, you name it, you know, just a product of the culture, really. So I liked comics growing up, and then I kind of evolved with them too. So I stopped reading like little kid comics and, you know, got into like Spawn and The Darkness and Witchblade and pretty much whatever Top Cow was putting out at the time. And then I kind of waned out of comics for a while. And then I got back into it in like the mid 2000s. And that's when I was going to school. I went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, and I started reading the Astonishing X-Men. And that's the book that pulled me back in. And then I was kind of reading, you know, Marvel's under like Bendis's run and stuff like that. And, you know, ever since then, I've just always kind of been into it. Went back and got into all the classics, you know, the Alan Moore stuff, Frank Miller.
Yep.
You know, I'm still always like digging and finding new books and stuff that I like. So what got me into actually drawing comics was I'd always wanted to do it, and I had done it in like, you know, little things here and there growing up, and make like comics about aliens taking over and stuff, whatever. But to actually put a book out, it's just, I'm a creative person, whether like I used to do a lot of music, obviously, you know, graphic design, art, illustration. Mm-hmm. It was just more of the fact that like, I just wanted a new creative outlet at the time. And, what really pushed it, cause I was developing Volantis, like, kind of in the background over a couple of years. But so I got into an accident where I broke some vertebrae in my spine. And so I was like in a back brace and stuff, and I wasn't really, you know, I needed something to do. So my friend challenged me to draw 100 Marvel characters in 100 days. So I just sat down every day and drew and made myself discipline, and through that I, you know, started really drawing pages and taking it seriously and like looking up conventions to go to and showing, you know, comic professionals my art and, you know, trying to learn what I could, because I'm you know, I'm self-taught. So just kind of, you know, just kind of doing that, just fishing out, you know, from other sources and finding other local creators too, and seeing if they had the time to like work with me and stuff. So everyone in Buffalo that makes comics, I mean, for the most part, we all know each other. We all hang out. We all do the same shows together, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good way to grow too.
Yeah. It definitely helps from what we've heard, like building a community with fellow writers and artists and stuff like that. And just really quick, back to your time in Pittsburgh, did you ever go to, is it Edie's or Ides Entertainment, the huge comic shop there?
I've never been to Ides.
Okay.
But I've been to, I lived in Oakland, so I went to Phantom of the Attic in Oakland, and it was also like a half a block away from where I worked. But actually, they carry the Volantis trade there too. I'd have to check and see if they had sold out of that or not, but. Yeah, that's the one I kind of went to just because of proximity.
Mm-hmm. It's I think Pittsburgh is one of the interesting cities for comic shops because there's some good ones there, and I mean not every city that I've gone to has like a nice presence of it. Like Pittsburgh's one of them, and I always thought that was pretty interesting. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I go to Pittsburgh quite often, and more recently it's usually I'm on the weekends, so I don't really not all the shops are open when I get a chance to get out there. So. But I'm going back there in like 2 weeks. Maybe I'm trying to make a trip out that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so let's hop over. So you said Volantis, you were kind of like thinking of a few years before you really got to doing anything with it.
Yeah. I'd say I started plotting it out, kind of developing it back in like 2014, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't start drawing it or anything till like 2015, 2016. And then even after I started drawing it, I stopped for like a half a year for some reason. I think I had to work or I can't recall. But I did take like 6 months off between the time I started it and I actually like got back to work and finished it. And
So give us the plot synopsis. What is this thing that you're developing?
It's an epic saga, I guess. It's about a warring family set 100 years in the future. So I was studying engineering at the time. So I was like developing like technology that is plausible that would be used like 100 years from now, given the cataclysmic event that leads to the origin of the story, basically. So a big inspiration behind it is the book 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Marquez, my bad. It's been a while since I read it. But that book was about a family kind of going through the same thing. It's about a Colombian family, and like they owned a banana plantation, and it took place over 100 years. So it goes throughout the generations of the family. In my book, it's kind of doing the same thing, except for it's not spanning 100 years. It's just set 100 years into the future. The overarching baddie is the matriarch of the family, but she's grown corrupt over, you know, her 100-year rule or whatever. Mm-hmm. So her great-grandson, you know, wants to, like, bring peace and prosperity to it. And then along the line, I've, like, introduced all these different characters and, like, magic surrealism and future technology, and that kind of drives the plot in different areas and stuff. With that said, Volantis has been on hiatus for about a year just because I've done like 5 other books in between. Mm-hmm. So when I get the chance to get back into it, I definitely want to finish up like the main story arc for now.
How far into it are you right now?
I'm halfway through the 9th issue, and I was going to end it at 12. And then, you know, if I got the chance to do it again, I would do another 12 issue arc. I wanted to do like 3 12 issue arcs. Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to finish that up so I can at least get like a second trade.
Yeah, and obviously, like, stuff that comes along the way that you could get done, you know, with 1 or 2 issues, you're probably doing that in between, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the name of the game is you got to make money, too, you know what I mean? Like, I got to keep the roof over the house or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, if I get I've gotten a couple jobs where I was doing books for hire, and it is what it is, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then let's talk Tough Stuff, because that was your latest Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how was that?
It was great, because I had... Yeah, right?
Yeah, he's got it right there.
Nice. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was nice to run a Kickstarter that worked, that was successful. Mm-hmm. Gave me a little credibility. And on top of that, like, I wanted to do a lot. So, like, how he showed you that box, I didn't tell anybody. That was, like, a gift. You know what I mean? That was, like, a secret I had. So, when I do the next one, I hope that people kind of see that, like, I have this reputation for over-delivering, you know? Mm-hmm, so, hopefully, mm-hmm. the next Kickstarter is as successful, if not more. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was just fun. I did it. I was drawing the book as I was running the Kickstarter because people were buying their way into it. Like, that was one of the tiers, is you could be drawn into the book. Okay. So I was literally doing it as I went. So it was kind of cool because I that was the quickest I ever did a project, because I handle the penciling, inking, lettering, art, you know, I do every step of it, you know? So, yeah, I just kind of crushed it. I mean, I did that whole book in like 2.5 months, 3 months, and it's 40 pages. So it's not like, you know, it wasn't a slouch fest or anything. Like, right, I was just jamming. The reception was great. Sold a lot of issues. A lot of people liked it. I'm working on the sequel now. I'm going to announce a Kickstarter soon, very soon. My plan was like as early as next week, but I'm still waiting on a couple more promotional materials to be completed where I can do that. I'm really excited about it. It's a great story. It's super funny. That's the one thing I want people to take from it, is that it's funny. So when I get good response and feedback, like, oh, I can't believe you did this, or I'll watch people read it and I see them like stop and giggle. It makes me very happy. So it means that I'm doing a good job. That's awesome. But yeah, it was just fun to do something different. And it to be a self-contained story. I think that helps, you know, selling it. It's not like Volantis got hard. Volantis was kind of difficult because, you know, if I'm putting out a new book and you haven't read the first 7 issues, why are you going to buy issue 8? You know what I mean?
Right.
Or
right,
issue
right,
9 right. or whatever. But I'm definitely like, don't get me wrong. I really don't want to leave that open and not completed. So I'm really trying to get back to it. But right now I'm just kind of spinning a lot of plates. So, you know, once I get some things done and out of the way, maybe I'll get back to it, but yeah.
And real quick, I talked about the book after I read it on this show, but what is the elevator pitch for Tough Stuff?
A Troubled Alley Cat has to save spring break in 1993.
Nice.
There you go.
Pretty simple.
And what's the title for issue 2?
Tough Stuff Goes to Rehab.
That's amazing. It's got to be a breath of fresh air too, to do something that's a little more comedic and like lighthearted, I would say, right, than Volantis.
Yeah. And I don't have to draw like human anatomy, like perfect human anatomy on every page and like worry about like stiff characters and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like trying to be serious, so I can pretty much do whatever I want, you know? So I'm getting more like zany, cartoony.
Yeah, it's impressive to me to say that you did that in like 2-3 months, because the book is high quality from the cover and how you did the wraparound to all the interior pages are just awesome. So kudos to that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I worked really hard on just nailing like every panel and the flow and storytelling and character design and the overall look. Like I had I used a very strict palette when it came to the coloring of it. I made my own like filters. I have like an overlay, so it kind of looks like I want it to look like an older book. Just really studying storytelling and you know, making sure everything is there for a reason and making it exciting and making you want to pick it up and actually read it and not put it down.
Yeah.
And so you said every issue of Tough Stuff is going to be like a standalone issue. Do you have a certain amount that you want to do, or are you just, as if it keeps going, you want to keep doing it?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Just tough stuff. We'll see how Tough Stuff 2 goes. I mean, do I have other tough stories written? Yes. Are they all as big and epic? Yes. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the next one, the next one's bigger, I think. I think it's bigger. It's funnier. It's definitely, it's bigger. Bigger cast. Just, you know, you got to elevate the stakes every time, right?
Yeah,
definitely. For sure.
So the last one came in like a nice box and everything. So how do you one up that? You know, what are you got some surprises planned maybe for the next one?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay. No, because I didn't know about that either, and I'm like, damn, I wish I got like a physical copy now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of like, you know, what people are looking for too. Right now I'm trying to figure out, so I did like a hollow foil cover for the last one. I did a couple different print versions. I did a black and white. I did a normal one. I did the hollow foil. And then I teamed up with a comics company, called 3D Comics out of Depew or Lancaster. Anyways. And, we did the variant. We did a star variant for them, which is the New Mutant homage.
Oh, nice.
So right now, there's three covers so far. And I'm just trying to see if I'm going to do any different kind of printing with them or if I'm just going to leave it to the three. So
is that variant available anywhere, like for on their website, or
this is only available through me and through 3D Comics. I don't know how many copies they have, 'cause we only did 100. They're individually. Okay. Oh. Individually marked and labeled and signed, and then they're sealed on the back, and they come with a certificate.
Oh shit!
So we did like, there's only a couple copies left I have. We did like an online sale, and we sold like 70 of the copies the first day.
Damn.
So yeah. I've just kind of sold a couple stragglers here and there. But yeah, if anyone wants one, just contact me directly. The price point's a little high, so I think that kind of scares people away, but. I think you have to have some sort of valuable, like markup for a book to be graded perfectly or something like that. Is that, you know anything about that?
Yeah, I don't, Chris and I talk about this a lot. You're talking about CGC grading, right?
Yeah, I don't really,
there's some
I
weird
it.
Rules there. Yeah, yeah. We're not too sure about it. 'Cause we've had some discussions of like, because you can't get over like a 9.8, right, or something like that, unless and honestly, I don't know, because I've seen books that have been like restored, and they don't get better ratings than they had before. So I don't not to knock CGC, but I don't know like what their set rules are for those types of things. You know,
yeah, I've dealt a lot with the collector's market. Like Tough Stuff is been popping kind of in the collector's market, so I don't really know how all that works either, but I know that we put like a tamper proof seal on there.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you submit it and everything, so it's got all that. So like these sell for 30. You know, so they're not readers, you know what I mean? They're not
honestly though, that's cheaper than I thought.
Yeah.
you probably could ask more than that. Yeah, because we'll talk after this, because I'll probably buy one off you after this episode. I didn't know about those. But.
I only have two of these left. Two of these boxes all together. But what I was doing was a whole pack of the four different print versions.
Okay. That's so cool, the fact that it comes in like that.
So you got, you know, the black and white.
Yep.
The black and white. The regular. Cover.
Which I love that regular A cover.
The hollow foil.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, shiny. This one's kind of funny. I did a remark on this one. He's flipping the bird.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
So I was doing these sets for $75. I've got a couple left. I don't have any more of these boxes, so if you know, hopefully people that really want to get in on this, they'll be more encouraged to get on the Kickstarter next time. Mm-hmm. And I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do with that, as far as what kind of reward and packages I want to do, because, I want to get that number higher up.
For sure.
But I don't want to like gouge people either at the same time. So it's like a real fine line to walk, but yeah.
So real quick in there, you also do music on the side as well. And I haven't had the chance to listen to any of it, but I know it's within the rap culture and all that stuff. Mike and I are metalheads, so excuse our ignorance on some of this.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
But how much of that was influenced into Tough Stuff? Because I do get some of that vibe from the 80s Florida scene within that book.
The more of the vibe for Tough Stuff was like B movies from the 80s and 90s, like real low budget, like crap movies, like Samurai Cop. I don't know if you ever heard of Amir Shervin. He's a director. He made like a bunch of movies in the 80s with no budget. They're violent. They're horribly like edited and dubbed, and like they all revolve around like cocaine and like thieving, and like there was like, you know, random gratuitous nudity for no reason. Like, I just like really, I like stuff like that. I don't know how else to describe it. I love B movies. I love movies that like people hate, you know, I don't know, just like the weird practical effects from, you know, like just people really trying to make something out of nothing. Like I appreciate and love that so much. So that was the bigger inspiration on that. I wouldn't really say so much the music. I did make a Spotify like soundtrack for Tough Stuff. And if you got one of those boxes that had a little card with like a QR code, you could scan it in. So I did have like a soundtrack, but it was more like random, because I love pop songs and ballads too. And I'm really like ashamed to say that. I'm like a hip-hop dude, but I love power ballads, man. What do you want me to say? Like,
hell yeah.
There's nothing like a good power ballad.
Dude, yeah, I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Even I like metal too, man. Like, I like, if the music's good, I like it. But yeah, I want to try to segue this into something else, but like I said, the big inspiration was low budget. Late 80s, early 90s movies. Tubi. You're going Tubi streaming service?
Yeah, I know Tubi. Yeah.
Go on Tubi and go on Cult Classics and just fucking pick whatever. Just pick whatever at random and.
Yeah.
You know.
I think the most B movie I get is like Evil Dead, and that's like pretty popular now. You know, like.
Oh yeah, go.
And you can go further than that, like when Bubba Hotep and then all those other ones.
Bubba I don't like Bubba Hotep.
No, you know, but I don't know if anybody does, but it exists. It's
it does exist.
All those Bruce Campbell movies matter.
The premise for Bubba Hotep, just telling somebody what that movie's about, is way better than actually watching the movie.
Yeah, because
I remember when somebody told me about it, it was my buddy Sean in like high school. And I was like, that sounds like the greatest thing ever made. And then I watched him like, it's not that good. It was, the conversation Sean and I had was way better.
Yeah, it was better than the movie.
Bruce Campbell is in a movie called Maniac Cop.
Oh, man.
Please watch it.
Okay, I've never seen that.
It's about like a guy, he's like Jason, but he's a cop. And he's Maniac Cop.
Oh, my God.
Like, he just goes on a killing spree. It's so
bad. My God. I see the picture. It looks awful.
That's Robert Zadar. That's his real chin. He's a beautiful man.
Wow. It looks fake. It looks fake.
No, that's his face.
That's amazing. I'm gonna have to check this out.
He's in a bunch of Robert or Amir Shervin movies. He's in Samurai Cop. He's like one of the bad guys in Samurai Cop. Oh my God, watch Samurai Cop. Just the first one.
I can't believe that's this man's chin is like, he literally is the Crimson Chin from, was it Fairly Odd Parents?
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Like, that man's chin is like a bulldozer.
It's called like a cherubism or something. It's like that's what he has. He passed away.
Okay.
I did a lot of research. He was what do you call it? A Chippendales dancer.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then someone wanted him for a movie.
Well, if you ever watch Amir Sherman movies, he's like bare chested, like he's like always sucking his gut in, and like they throw like girls at him and stuff. Oh my god.
Wait, this is a trilogy of movies?
Which one? Maniac Cop?
Maniac Cop.
Probably. I know there's two. I never seen the third one. I can only imagine.
Maniac Cop 2, Butcher in Black, or Butcher in Blue, and then Maniac Cop 3, Badge of Silence.
Oh my god. You can't. These titles are amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, here amazing. We go. Let's get the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh.
Two?
It's probably 100. What do you mean?
50-50.
It's weird. Those B movies live in like the single digits on Rotten Tomatoes, but like honestly, I'd rather watch a single digit Rotten Tomatoes movie than like a 20 or 30.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like that's where those B movies
they actually
live.
Tried. Like it's competent filmmaking. It's just
right. It's just garbage. Terrible.
Have you ever seen the movie The Stuff?
No.
Watch it.
What is
The Stuff? Is great
The Stuff.
It's about this meteorite strikes Earth and this like Cool Whip comes out of it.
What?
And like this company like decides to like bottle it and like it's yogurt or something and it becomes like everyone's like favorite thing to eat, but it controls you. It's like,
oh my god, it's like
an invasion movie. Oh my god.
This poster is terrifying.
Which
it's like
one
oozing out of it. Yeah, it's like oozing out of his eyes and his mouth. Like what the hell?
Oh my god.
Yeah. Have I never heard of this?
I don't know, but you should watch it.
No,
this stuff is actually pretty good. It's actually a good movie. Like it's competently made. Yeah.
I mean, I need a list of movies for Halloween, so like,
oh my god.
Here we go.
Reanimator?
I know Reanimator.
Yeah, we know Reanimator. Yeah,
we know that one. I usually like as far as practical effects go, I'll watch like Hellblazer 2.
Hellraiser 2 is one of my favorites.
Hellraiser 2, yeah.
I love the maze. I love Dr. Chouinard. He's got that weird laugh, and he's like,
"Yep,
yeah, like a dolphin."
Yeah.
I just want to let you know that for the low price of $19.99, you can buy a pint of The Stuff.
Oh, it's probably just Fluffernutter. I hope.
Yeah, probably.
I hope. But just to, okay, not to get too off track here. Tough Stuff. Is there any issue? So you said just contact people on your website if you want to get a hold of these books.
Yeah, that or me on social media or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Kickstarter, so it's not like I have like widespread distribution. It did get picked up for publishing, but like, dude, that deal is like taking forever. I don't even know where I am on that totem pole.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming when we get issue 2 on Kickstarter, they'll be able to get issue 1 through that Kickstarter as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Awesome. And if we want to send any of our listeners, viewers, to find you, where can they go?
On Facebook, my name is Delgado Kevin.
Okay.
I got hacked. So like I had to start a new profile.
No.
I lost my Facebook and Instagram. My new Instagram is solstice_art, solstice_art. On Twitter, I'm Frigid Giant, capital F, capital G, no space, Frigid Giant. I have a website. It's kevindelgado.co. And yeah, whatever. There's always links to everything between all of them. Like if you go on my Facebook, I have all my websites listed, Linktree or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you go through Instagram, same thing. If you go to Twitter, same thing. And then, you know, I got a Linktree. You could tap into that. You know, they're all conjoined and stuff. And there's always links and buttons to get everywhere.
And you said there's a couple of comic shops that were selling your stuff too.
Yeah, 3 Comics, Gutter Pop Comics. Actually, if you want to order online, Gutter Pop is probably your best bet. They got a really good online store. They have everything cataloged. Okay. And you know, and they ship out. And I never hear anything bad about them. 3D, same way. They're pretty good. Queen City and Buffalo, they sell my books. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'd get out to more places, but I don't really like doing like a, what do you call it? Not commission, but what is it called?
Distributing kind of, or?
Well, like yeah. If I give a bunch of product to some place, I have to follow up with them and see if they sold it, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, right.
I'd rather just have it. If they don't buy it outright straight from me, it's mm-hmm. like I just don't like doing deals unless they're like that. So I'm covered, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. We'll get more. And like I said, hopefully Tough Stuff gets picked up for publishing, so it'll be widely distributed at some point. But I don't have a day. I don't have a month. I don't have a time. I don't have a year. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, awesome.
So yeah, everybody, the links to Kevin's website will be down below, and I also will have a link to Gutter Pop's website straight to pick up a copy of Tough Stuff, so you can order straight from them. So Kevin, thanks so much for being on.
Oh, yeah, hit Kevin up too.
Yeah, just hit me up too. I ship out. I spent friggin' a whole month just shipping out books.
So. Go straight to the source.
No complaints, by the way. So
okay,
thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
And we're back.
All right. So check him out.
Yes. Check
his website. All the cool shit he's up to.
Read Tough Stuff. It's awesome.
Read Tough Stuff. Yes. Check it out. And with that, let's get into comic news.
Lots of DC news.
Oh, hell yeah. My favorite. DC has announced that Terry McGinnis is back for a 6-issue miniseries spinning out of Batman Urban Legends number 7 is Batman Beyond Neo Year, where writers Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing are an artist Max Dunbar. It's a Neo-Gotham Batman Beyond has to solve the case of Bruce Wayne's murder. That actually sounds pretty cool to me. I might jump in and read that.
Of course I'm in. I'm a show for Batman Beyond. So.
Oh, hell yeah.
This is, if anyone's not reading Batman Urban Legends, and I know a lot of people jumped off of it because issue 6 was Chip's last issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're doing now is they're doing like short stories of different versions of Batman. So they got like issue 7 has a Batman 1,000 or 1 million story in it. And it's got this in it. And this is, the story in that is the intro to this, where he finds Bruce dead and realizes he's been murdered and all this stuff. So by the same creative team, too.
Oh, cool. So
that's a really good anthology book that DC's doing that's not getting enough attention.
Yeah, I wasn't reading it, but we'll check it out. What's better than one Batgirl? How about two Batgirls? Well, the new series, Batgirls, plural, from writers Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad, with artist Jorge Corona, and we follow Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown as they navigate Gotham Underground. So if you're a Cassandra Cain or a Stephanie Brown fan, well, they solved the issue here, right? We put them both in a book together.
Seriously.
And I think, well, Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad are both fantastic writers, so I might even check this out because I have good faith in both of them.
Yeah, and I know there's a ton of Stephanie Brown and Cassandra Cain fans out there, so I'm glad they're going to get the book they want. I don't have any interest in this, but I know there's a lot of people out there I know that are huge fans of these two characters.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Michael Conrad. I don't know how much I've really...
Becky Cloonan?
Becky Cloonan, yeah. Thanks, but I think I'm gonna check it out, just at least the first couple. I did read Batgirl back in the day, but that was the was it Dave Stewart? Was that who it was?
I couldn't tell you.
That was what? Do you remember when the purple yellow costume? That's when I got into Batgirl.
During New 52.
New 52, yeah.
Yeah, when she went to high school or whatever.
Yeah, it was actually like, I actually got into that. Like, I thought, yeah, I remember the first issue was like her taking a selfie, and I'm like, I have no interest in this book. And then I read it, and I'm like, okay, this book's pretty good.
I know, like, I know what they were going for there, and I know a lot of people liked it, but that was my opinion when I saw it. I'm like, I'm an old man, and this is not the book for me.
No, exactly. I was like, yeah, I thought it would be something that I would not care for, but I ended up actually liking it, so.
Cool.
But anyways, yeah, so I might check that out. DC has announced that writer Rob Venditti and artist Michael Avon Orning are going back in time to tell the story about the end of Krypton. The series is called World of Krypton and is said to star Jor-El, General Druzod, and young Kara Zor-El and the puppy Crypto sold. Venditti is a great writer. He understands the characters in DC, the pillar characters. So I think that's an interesting take. They really love to go with that Krypton stuff, man. Like, I don't understand it, but
I think I would be more down, because this is like, how do they save Krypton? And like, we all know how it ends. So
right.
They don't.
Yeah.
I would be more interested if they like almost did like a young Jor-El or something, or even before Jor-El, just do a random fucking Krypton thing. Like,
yeah,
World of Krypton. And here's our, that would be more interesting to me, but I'll check it out because, Venditti gets my money every time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's a great writer. DC is set to introduce an all-new super team with its own miniseries. One Star Squadron will be written by Mark Russell, sold. I don't have to read the rest of this. And art by Steve Lieber. The One Star Squadron is said to be where heroism meets capitalism, with the team of Red Tornado, Power Girl, Gangbuster, and Minuteman. What a crazy team up.
Yeah, when's the last time you saw Red Tornado in a book?
I don't know, but I love Red Tornado. And I will actually, I read a Red Tornado story. It was an old, I think it was an old like JSA trade. But heroism meets capitalism. Come on, Mark Russell can handle that.
Yeah. So the team's really cool. I love Power Girl. Mark Russell, obviously we love. And there's also like, I was reading the synopsis of it, and like, there's an app you can get. Like, in this world, there's an app you can get where you can, like, pay the One Star Squadron to, like, help you out. And they have different rates depending on, like, if you want them to stop by your birthday party or if you want them to save the world or whatever. So, I think, I mean, Mark's obviously written a lot on these issues, so I'm sure he'll knock it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be good for sure. This is pretty interesting. A new Swamp Thing miniseries is coming to DC Black Label. Writer Jeff Lemire, alongside artist Doug Monkey, bring us Swamp Thing Green Hell. In the future, humanity is lost on its last legs. The parliaments of the Green, Red, and the Rot all agree that Earth needs a reboot and summon a horrific monster to do the job. The only person who can fight the monster is Swamp Thing. Unfortunately, he's been dead for decades. I mean, you had me at Jeff Lemire, Green Swamp Thing. Honestly, you guys know how much I love Swamp Thing. I think Jeff Lemire is the perfect writer to handle a character that is rooted more in, yeah, they call it the Green, but it's more of like a psycho, like a psyche. I don't know what do you call it? Like in his own head, pretty much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's where his powers are. They lie like within, which happens to be this huge network that he can cross the entire world with. But I think this is all. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, and I like how Lemire is jumping in on these books, like non continuity books, so you can do whatever the fuck he wants. But yeah, you have me at Jeff Lemire. I'm down.
Yeah, yeah.
I could use a good Swamp Thing book.
Oh yeah. I told you, the one right now is really good.
I'm going to pick up the trade when it's done.
Yeah. It's, and I think that's what you see a lot of people doing, just because Ram V doesn't have a big name for himself yet, but, All right, so Marvel news. Marvel has announced that alongside Spider-Man Beyond, they'll have another Spider series telling Ben Reilly's adventures from the time of the Spider-Clone saga. Ben Reilly, Spider-Man, will be written by J.M. DeMatteis with art by David Baldion. I mean, if you're a Spider fan, you're buying all the Spider books, right? Is that how it goes?
Apparently. I know the Spider fans like DeMatteis, Ben Reilly stuff, but like... Mm-hmm. Fuck, people. The clone saga sucked.
We don't need to talk about the clone saga anymore. Do we really? Like,
I'm stealing this from Gib because this was 100% his, but it's mine now. He has me convinced that Ben Reilly's showing up in No Way Home. That's the only reason that he's getting so much attention right now.
You think so?
I can't think of another one. Why? Why would you go back to Clone Saga unless that was what you're going to do? I don't know. But I was talking to my retailer.
Wait. Hold on. Do you think Tobey Maguire is the Ben Reilly clone?
That would be hilarious.
Why not?
I'm down for that idea.
Oh, my God.
I was talking to my retailer because I was like, you know, I think Spider-Man 74 comes out this week and it's my last Spider-Man issue because Nick Spencer's leaving and I no longer care. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, that's cool. So you don't want to jump on with this Beyond thing? I was like, no, because I don't care about Ben Reilly. the creative team's good. I'll give it, like, I like who's on it, but I don't care about Ben Reilly and I'm not picking up a Spider book 3 weeks out of the month. Yep. And he just laughed. He goes, I love it. You know why? Because Spider fans will buy every fucking issue every time.
Oh, they can
put it out 6 times a month and they'll buy every issue. I'm like,
yep. Yep.
Now it is 4 books a month for all these Spider fans out there.
Yep. Can't get enough Spider-Man. I mean, if Spider-Man's your favorite character, I mean, Batman's my favorite character, but I won't buy all 10 Batman books.
See, and I fear that Marvel's heading that direction. Like, we have... So, Spider-Man's coming out 3 times a week. We've got Ben Reilly Spider-Man. We got Symbiote Spider-Man. We got Nonstop Spider-Man. I think that's it. So, we're up to 6.
Yeah.
Where, like, I think last time that it was counted, like, DC... Half of DC publishing is Batman. And that's if you don't count Justice League.
Yeah, right. Which he's in.
So I fear that Marvel's getting close, but I mean, so far, not so much.
All right, so I have a lot of books I'm going to talk about that are read. I'm just going to skim through. Some of these I hardly even remember because I've read so much. So I'm reading the Suicide Squad King Shark books. So number 3 came out. That's the Tim Seeley run. Really good. I mean, it's King Shark, like, basically in Mortal Kombat inside the red, which is part of the green, but it's the animalistic side of things.
Yeah, very Animal good. Man.
Animal Man. Lost Falls, number 2. This is Kurt Pyers, Antonio Fuso. It's like a Twin Peaks book. Investigating a missing girl in this town. He's very... it's like a southern white town, and he's a black man walking around, so obviously he's, you know, being discriminated against. Meanwhile, he finds, you know, some kids are taking these drugs, and that's how the kid died. But lo and behold, this guy finds a cult in the woods outside of the town. So there's a little more going on. Oh, I'm sorry, it's King Shark number 4, not number 3. Hailstone, I finished that up. That was another Comixology original, really good. This is Batman the Detective, number 5 out of 6. This is the Tom Taylor run with Andy Kubert. This is probably the best combo for a Batman book. You know, a lot of the villains are killing people that he saved. Basically, the overall villain, Batman had saved someone, and then that person turned around to, like, kill their parents in a car crash or something like that, so that's why they're going back and killing, because Batman saved this person that led to the, you know, their family's deaths. That's why Batman's going back and doing all that shit. Radiant Black, the book of the year. Are you still reading this?
I am. I didn't get to pick up my books this week.
Oh, okay. So yeah. This is issue number 8. Basically, they fight this, like, new Radiant Black they find with a sword, and, you know, they're half the team split up. They're fighting him. And then they get to the point where they're like, you know, they're winning the fight, and then he kind of pieces out. Or actually, the Radiant Black has a new power. Like, this fist comes out of his chest and, like, grabs the guy, pulls him into his chest, and he doesn't know what the hell happened. Meanwhile, the government or the secret agency finds the ship where someone landed, so they're aware that there's some alien technology on Earth. Phantom Starkiller number 1, this is Black Caravan, which is a part of Scout Comics. It's basically like Skeletor / Darth Vader is like this bounty hunter assassin is trying to get his ship back from his partner that betrayed him. Really good stuff. I downloaded The Blue Flame, haven't read it yet. I also downloaded Heist or How to Steal a Planet, have not read that yet. And The Autumnal, I keep hearing good things about The Autumnal. As a really good horror book, so I'm looking forward to reading that. Okay. I'm almost caught up in The Nice House on the Lake. This is the James Tinian horror book.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. Really unsettling. This dude traps these people. Doesn't even trap these people. It's an alien that's ending the world, but he made friends with these people throughout his life, so he keeps them at a house, and he doesn't know why he's keeping them in this cabin at the lake. Like, he has no why. They don't know why. Frontiersman number 1. Did you pick this up?
I did, actually.
Dude, I picked it up because of the cover, and I thought you would have, too. Did you read it?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. This is Patrick Kindlin, Marco Ferrari in the art. Basically, this frontiersman, he was almost like Davy Crockett or someone, and he used to be a hero, and now he goes and lives in the woods by himself. They're trying to tear down the redwood forest, so this activist reaches out to him and is like, dude, you should post up in the forest because people used to respect you, they used to fear you, you can make a statement for climate change, or like at least preserving the forest. And so, like, he consults some friends throughout the issue, and then he goes and does it. I think it's a cool premise. I thought it was a fun book.
Yeah, and it had when Mike says hero, he means superhero.
Superhero, like, sorry, yeah. Yeah.
This is a superhero universe, and it's almost got, right, like Kingdom Come vibes, where we're on, yep, like the second generation of heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like some of the dialogue between Frontiersman and some of the people he comes across about how people treat these issues throughout their life and different things. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in here, and the art's really cool.
Batman Adventures Continue Season 2, number 4. Did you read this?
No.
Burnett, Dini, Gibson. It's a issue devoted to this villain hired Muscle, and his name is Muscle. So, it's a fun issue. Well, not, I mean, it's, if you like Batman Adventures, the animated series, it's a fun issue. Batman and the police are working together to get this guy who was also hired by someone on the political board, like for Gotham. So there's some corrupt shit going on there. I thought it was good. I enjoy these continuations for animated series.
As do I.
This is Batman number 113. Man, I really just want this whole story to end. We're still doing the Fear State shit with James Tinian and Jorge Jimenez. Jimenez's art's fantastic. Basically, the Scarecrow, he has this whole plan to implant fear into the Gotham and then save them or let them save themselves. Like, that's his whole plan. And so, like, he has Ghost Maker go into his brain, and, like, he's like, okay, you know, you have something implanted in here, and it was actually, like, a piece that Scarecrow implanted in his brain, so I think they fight it off, they get it out. And now we have the problem with Peacemaker 01 is, like, all jacked up on fear toxin, and he's about to start killing civilians. So Batman's got to get to him. Shazam, number three. This book's really fun. Tim Sheridan and Henry on the art. It's they're still in hell. They're trying to get to the Rock of Eternity, and Neron shows up, N-E-R-O-N. And Neron, I guess, like, he's an evil villain dude that preys off of, like, children. That's what I found out. And so, like, he has some past and history with Shazam. And so, you know, they're down in hell. Neron was the reason, like, he brought them to the Rock of Eternity, and he's like, I want your powers, Shazam. And he knows that Billy's friend, what's his name? Freddy needs the power of Shazam so he doesn't die from his disease. Because he can call upon Shazam and he's immortal. So there's a big fight, and then Raven shows up. Which she knew the Rock of Eternity was there and never told him. So, like, Billy's all pissed off. He hears someone calling to him within in hell. And he opens this door and he finds Black Adam. And Black Adam's very young. He's like younger than Billy, or younger, as young as Billy, but as Black Adam. So I don't know what's happening now. And he's standing there with a torch. So all is to be revealed. Justice League Last Ride, that was good. I read Magic Order by Mark Miller. That was a 4-issue or 6-issue miniseries. Did you ever read that?
No.
It's really good. It's a family of magic users, and they betray each other. You know, there's some, it's almost like Jupiter's Legacy. There's some, like, you know, rift in between the family. It's a solid story. Superman and the Authority is another good one, with Kingdom Come Superman building up this team. They have to get Enchantress this issue. And so, they get her, and then Ultra Humanite shows up. And so, like, Superman's having an issue fighting him because he doesn't really have powers. So, that's kind of where they left off. Ultra Humanite gets a hold of Superman and is carrying him away. So I'm guessing the next issue is going to be all the villains that he's recruited to help are going to have to, like, team up and help him out. Yeah, so Fantastic Four, Life Story, number four. We're in the 90s now, so, you know, getting into the good shit. this one, I mean, it focuses more on, like, the relationship of Thing to everybody else, because he kind of narrates it and talks about, like, how he fell in and out of love, how Mr. Fantastic and Sue fall in and out of love. And then we get a visit from the almighty Silver Surfer. So that was a pretty awesome issue. And he's basically like, wow, you guys are a bunch of ninnies because you're not ready for when Galactus shows up. if you think I was bad. Beyond the Breach, number three. This book's kind of crazy. It's, I don't really know what's going on yet. This is, you know, these people have been transformed to a different planet, we think, or they're in the U.S. still, but they're from a different planet. So they've hitched up with this wizard dude that has a giant turtle, and this girl has been protecting this. Ed Bryson's the writer, by the way, and Damian Kuchiro on the art is fantastic. So you get a lot of crazy monsters, a lot of, like, wasteland shit. But, you know, they hitch up with this wizard guy, and they find these, like, army people, like futuristic army people that say he's dangerous, watch out, and they start shooting first. So the lady makes the assessment, like, the main character's like, okay, well, if they started shooting at us with a kid, I'd like to think that the guy who's with us trying to protect us is probably on the right side of things. So they get into a fight, they have some crazy weapons that, like, disintegrate people, and then they kind of, like, get away, and they start walking, like, further down the U.S., across the U.S., and they see, like, these giant aliens that are, like, that have died, and he says it's, like, because of me. So this quest that this wizard dude has been on is killed a lot of people, just him being on the run or, like, wherever he's going. It's an interesting book. I would check it out. Justice League Last Ride was good. Justice League, the main Justice League book, got pretty crazy. I don't know if you've read that, but shit's going down with Merlin in the Justice League Dark, and then in the regular Justice League. I didn't really care for the art in this issue. It was a little wonky. But how did the end? Yeah, something about the cartographer. I don't know. Are you reading Justice League right now?
I'm like 3 or 4 issues behind.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot going on with, they gave an intro to all these different villains, pretty much, from the last issue. I don't know if they've been like confronted with these like this guy from another world. Bendis does a lot of this crazy shit. I don't know where he's going with this, because a lot of the stuff that Bendis has been setting up lately hasn't really gone anywhere. So, and then they're trying to tie in this whole Deathstroke and Checkmate thing, which is kind of confusing. Honestly, I read this book for the second half of it, which is the Justice League Dark story with the Merlin taking over, and they have to fight Merlin. I fucking love that story. So,
just funny because I don't even read the dark stuff.
Oh, see, okay. Well, then we're opposites. And then Batman, last book I want to talk about, Batman 89. I also have some real books to talk about. Basically, we get the origin. Catwoman returns from Batman, the Batman, the movie, and then...
is it Halle Berry?
No, it's... what was her name? From the first Catwoman. From the... The Val Kilmer Batman movie. Oh my god. I can't think of her name. But she shows up. The one with the stitching all over her suit. And then Harvey Dent goes into a burning building in this black community of people that he knows, and he falls over on his face. So if you can imagine, he's probably going to turn into Two-Face. And then...
Yeah. I was thinking about picking up this series just because I saw that they're going to turn Billy Dean Williams into Harvey Dent into Two-Face.
Yeah.
Like he should have.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm down for that. And
it's really good.
Picking it up.
it deals with like the black community and like Batman and his support for them. Like, and then Bruce Wayne shows up and wants to give them money, and half the black community wants to accept it and half of them don't. So it's really good. I think it's a really good story. It takes Batman 89 way more seriously than I did when I first watched it. it takes it seriously like when Batman 89 first came out, because it was the only Batman movie at the time. Deadbox, number one. This is Mark Russell. Tiesma on the art. Tiesma does a killer job on the art. And so this is like Mark Russell's first time doing horror, I would say. I don't know about you, Chris.
First I can think of.
Yeah. And we know he does like a lot of political things. Basically, this woman runs a convenience store, and I guess at the end of it, her father is like, I think he's already dying. But there's something related to like there's a red box. It's called it's like a red box in the convenience store, and she says at the end like, we become the fiction. And so I don't know if they watch the DVD and that's you become the person or something like that. I don't know if that's where we're getting at, but he looks like a zombie, and there's the video of the vanishing man next to him. So,
I felt like this book was so everything I want to say is I love Mark Russell. I love what he does, and the political stuff doesn't bother me.
Right.
That said, I thought this book was three separate books. Mm. One was this story about this girl in the convenience store, and she's a very political, let's say somewhat Marxist ideology.
Right.
And then there's another book where she watches this movie and we get what this movie's about, which was, I thought, the most interesting part of the whole thing, which was we make contact with aliens and then they send somebody to meet the aliens. But because he's been in isolation this whole time and everything, he kind of goes insane.
Yeah.
And then the third was the fact that this red box exists and it doesn't have your typical movies. It doesn't have Avengers. It doesn't have, the stuff we know. It has like these B movies that nobody's heard of. And somehow those movies are what's turning people into these things. So I just felt like it was very congested with too many ideas, and he just didn't spend enough time to get me sold on this dead box idea for me to go into issue two, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sticking with it just because of I don't really know where it's going. But it says, like, welcome to Lost Turkey, where the main source of entertainment is a cursed DVD machine that seems to know more about the fate of its citizens than they do. So, something that, but that's not what I got from the issue, right?
Yeah.
I didn't get that. So...
That's something, what I'm saying. I feel like he's trying to get too much into the... And I feel like at a certain point, because all of Mark's work is very political in nature, even down to Flintstones, like Flintstones is a super political book.
Right.
That I almost felt like he was trying to jam that in instead of just telling a story.
Right.
And it's the first time I can say that I didn't like a Mark Russell book.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
I mean, it's going to happen. Yeah, it's going to happen.
No, I
there's Grant Morrison books I don't like. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. But I will say I feel you there, and I'm going to stick with it for at least a few issues. So I'll let you know, because I think something's happening here, and I didn't really grasp it. Like, I read the first issue, and I'm like, did I read that wrong? Something it didn't flow correctly. It didn't flow right. But I like the premise on the back of the issue.
Yeah.
I like that. So, yeah.
If I hear it takes a 360 and like really like gets its story straight and people are loving it, I'll probably go back and give it a shot later on. But I just think there's too much going on just in life in general and in the comics I read, that if you didn't get me in issue one and you were too congested in issue one, then I'm going to drop you.
Yeah. The art was fantastic, though. Hands down. Yes, really good. Yes. Yeah. I want to talk about The Lot, Marguerite Bennett and Renato Guides on the art. This last issue, this Bad Idea Comics, is coming out. This is a horror book for all horror books. Let me tell you, it's about selling your soul for a chance at making a movie. And this lot that used to make horror movies, like, sold their souls for immortality, and it's cursed, and the art makes it very jarring and horrific, and Marguerite Bennett is a sicko individual, and it just makes for a great book, and all the black and white is just really good stuff. So if you're into horror and you can find some Bad Idea Comics, The Lot is probably, I dare say it because I got to see some mechs shoot up dinosaurs, is probably one of my favorite books from Bad Idea. There, I said it. It's off my chest. Read a lot of comics this week. If anybody wants to have a discussion more about those, I don't have time to be here for 3 hours, but I will talk with you on Twitter, so tweet at me. But what did you have, Chris?
So I will try to be quick as well, because I didn't have as much as you, but I had a lot. I'll get the Kickstarter stuff out of the way first. The Territory came in. We talked to Grant. I got this awesome cover. Really good. Go back to that interview, find out what the book's about. Kaiju, religion, cool stuff. I picked this one up on a whim because I liked the premise, but it was another Kickstarter book called The 13th Labor. And the whole premise is that it basically pops right in as Hercules finishes his 12th labor after he's trying to get forgiveness from the gods and from humanity. And he finishes it gets Cerberus up to Olympus, and he just doesn't feel like he's gained the sympathy. He hasn't gotten rid of the pain from what he did. So Zeus comes up and starts talking to him and is like, well, I've got one more thing you can do that can really help us. In the future, there's going to be a tournament of champions, and you need to convince your great, 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 so on and so forth, grandson to be a part of it. And so him and, is it Hermes? Which one runs fast?
Messenger of the gods, Hermes.
Yes, Hermes. So Hermes pulls a Flash and runs him into the future.
Oh, nice.
And he ends up finding his this grandson, and all he finds is its tombstone. So they're like, well, something's not right here. And that's kind of where the book ends. Really cool story, really great art. I gotta say, even... this isn't a knock on anybody's Kickstarter, but one of the most high quality Kickstarter books I've ever gotten.
Cool.
And apparently these guys have been doing books for a while. I'm just now jumping on their board, but really good. Justice League Last Ride. I caught up on that. That book's phenomenal. If you're not reading it, I don't know what you're doing with your life.
It's really good.
I read the first issue of Superman, The Authority.
Okay. Yep.
I really liked it.
Okay.
I liked where it ended off, and I liked the whole... I liked the intro the most, honestly. Like, him talking with Kennedy and that whole, like, dynamic was really cool.
It's really good.
But then when, like, who's he end up going to? Manchester Black. Like, their dynamic and everything. So I'm going to buy the next couple issues and catch up on that.
Nice.
We talked about Deadbox. Primordial, number one. This is Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino's follow-up to Gideon Falls.
Yep.
It's an alternate reality where Kennedy loses the election in the 60s. And the U.S. and the Soviet Union give up on their space program. This guy is brought in to be a part of the program. At least he thinks he is. What he finds out is what he's really doing is helping gut the program for military use. And he finds something along the way that's just not right. And apparently the monkeys that both the countries set up in the space supposedly died. But he ends up finding out that they didn't. But he doesn't know what's wrong. So that's kind of like, it's setting up this cool story. Loved it. Love Sorrentino's art. Love alt history stuff. Really great. Awesome. It's got like 2001 Space Odyssey vibes to it too, which really hits me the right way. Lucky Devil. I read the first two issues of that. I think that's all it's out so far. It's a really good book. I don't know if you're reading this one.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy gets possessed by a demon and he ends up going to a budget exorcist.
Okay.
And the demon gets, or the exorcist gets rid of the demon, but doesn't get rid of the power of the demon. So now this like this normal dude who's kind of like, he's just some nerdy guy who like has this hot girlfriend who cheats on him all the time. But he's like, she's hot, so I'll just let her do it. And like, he's just this kind of like just base dude. And then when this happens, he starts a cult and he's like, fuck it, I got demon powers now.
Wow.
But what ends up happening is the demon comes back and is just like trying to get his powers back. And the dude obviously says no. But then the demon tells him, like, you think like hell's just going to let this happen? Like, no, they're sending people up. So as he's building this cult, like these other demons are coming after him. It's a really good book. It's honestly probably, and I've been reading Parasomnia as well. It's probably my favorite Colin Bunn thing in a long time. I highly recommend it.
Awesome. Okay, I'll check it out.
We talked about Deadbox. We talked about Frontiersman. Aquaman the Becoming, number one.
Oh, okay.
So this isn't exactly Jackson Hyde taking over as Aquaman, but what's happening is like Aquaman has to go on a mission. So he's like, Jackson, you be Aquaman while I'm gone. And he takes off.
Mm-hmm.
But something big happens while he's gone. And, he has to kind of deal with it. It's really well written. I like where they're going with everything. Basically, Jackson, they have this like VR machine underwater where they can practice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackson's using it. And while he's using it, like Atlantis gets attacked and he's framed for a terrorist attack. And that's kind of where the book leaves it. Way better than I thought it would be. I was looking forward to it, but just so much better than I thought it would be. Cool. Definitely recommend that book. And then a review book coming out this Wednesday, Unborn number one from Source Point Press.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Power Rangers meets The Thing.
Okay.
You've got these guys, these people up in the space station, and they're trying to mine this planet for energy to solve the energy crisis, and they end up cracking open the world, and these like things come out and attack them, and then finding out that these things can reanimate dead tissue.
Oh,
okay. And they have to escape from them. And then I don't want to give it away because it's coming out this week, but something happens and it turns into a horror book real quick.
Oh, all right.
Interesting. I really enjoyed it. I thought the art was pretty good. I'll say the coloring is a little bland, but I don't know if that's like what they were going for with the space thing, because it's a lot of gray. But you have these five different characters. They each have a different weapon of a different color and all this. And so that's where you get the Power Ranger vibe from it.
Okay. I kind of like that.
I would say check it out. I enjoyed it enough where I would recommend buying it if you're at your local comic shop and you see it.
Cool.
I think that's everything I had. So, Mike, where can people find you on the internet?
If I'm at Fortress Ricker on Twitter, where can they find you and or the show?
They can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter. They can find the show at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter or at FortressComicNews.com. Remember, everybody, the 5-star reviews in the podcatcher, like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube and Patreon at patreon.com/FortressComics. Where you can give us money for things.
Yep.
Thank you all so much for listening this week, and we will see you all here next week.